She's a doctor.
Hi, I'm Dr. Dobek, and she's a dietitian.
Hey, I'm Hannah Schuyler, and together we are
the Doctor Dietitian Collab.
Today we've got Ashlyn with us.
Yes, we have Ashlyn Douglas Barnes, who is a licensed clinical social worker who is doing all the big things in the bariatric community. And she had surgery herself. So she has an incredible, compassionate, empathetic perspective that I think makes her one of the best in the game when it comes to the head work and the mental health aspect of all of this. So welcome, Ashlyn.
Yay! Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm super excited to talk all things bariatrics and emotions today, as this is sometimes the part that really catches people off guard is like what I even have to do with any of this.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So let's get in here with the big emotions and let's just rip the Band-Aid off and talk about it. How do you look at this when you're talking to a patient, you know, starting before surgery? And I know that you're also very involved in the sort of the workup, the evaluations, maybe even some therapy or, you know, doing a little bit of work beforehand. How does that look in preparation phase for surgery?
Yeah. So sometimes that part is tough because people are so excited and they just want to have surgery. They're going to tell me exactly what I want to hear. I'm good. I'm fine. I'm totally adjusted. I'm going to have this surgery and I'm going to be great. And so I tend to focus on kind of education on like how to know when to come back to me and things to look out for. But I think that occasionally I do have people who will come in and just be flat out honest and be like, yeah, I'm having this surgery because I want to look good. And I don't really want to change a lot of what's going on in my life. That's more rare. Most of the time people come to me and they're like, I've got a lot of health reasons. I'm in Orlando with Dr. Dobek. So, you know, I want to be able to go to the rides at Disney and fit and be around for my children. And I probably need some help, but I really don't want to delay this whole, you know, situation. So can I work with you or can we work on something? So in the beginning, it's tough because there's just a lot of excitement and it's like, I'm going to do what I need to do and get right into it. But I think if you were someone who wanted to be proactive and look at the things that, you know, try to figure out the things that you need to work on before surgery, we can almost always work in tandem. So we can move you forward with getting your surgery and we'll work on the stuff that you want to work on because chances are we can work on them like in vitro. Like we want you to be able to have those experiences and then come back and say, how did it go before you even have surgery? And so we can work in tandem with having surgery.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's super important. And I get the excitement. I mean, I'm probably guilty of trying to get patients to that moment because as you know, I mean, this is a huge decision, a very, very long time coming decision. Like I've thought about it forever. I didn't know. And then like when the switch goes off, you're like, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Like I'm committing to this big, huge life change. I can see my future. I'm manifesting it. I want it. And I want it like now, like when you see that, it's like, okay, we get your sense of urgency. We want to help you too. And so I think that whole piece, the psych piece, it gets caught up in it as if it's like, let's go get married. Let's go to Vegas tonight, baby. And let's get hitched. And that's what you're doing. And then you kind of wake up and you're like, oh, I'm all in. I quite literally woke up from anesthesia and I don't know what I'm doing now. So I don't know, like, how do you keep the excitement going and also make sure that, you know, you've done the necessary work?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's tough because what I tell people too is there's nothing I can tell you right now that is going to make you believe how you will feel after surgery. When people told me about what they thought the surgery could do, I thought in my head, well, that's other people because nothing else has worked. So I won't get excited because if it doesn't work, I don't want to be disappointed. But it is amazing for people, particularly who've never been kind of explained why this is occurring, you know, the pancreas connection, insulin, or like why this is occurring to begin with and why surgery is different than maybe other things that they've tried, like diet and exercise plans. So I think I try to remind people like we will figure that out then. Let's keep the excitement and that rolling through. And if you're a little afraid or scared, that's totally okay because that also lets me know you're like here on earth with me. You're in reality.
I like that.
You know, you're in reality that like, yeah, this is scary. And it, we don't exactly know what's going to happen. And we don't know how you will feel and all that. And that's okay. So let's figure out what we can figure out now, and we'll figure out what we can figure out then. I can tell you scientifically what we believe will happen, or what we've observed in other clients who've, you know, had surgery, why I think this would be different than another attempt that you've taken. And really that education around this is not your fault. This is a metabolic condition that is happening in your body. I think that is missed so much because so many of my clients have never even heard that. So many of my friends that have come to me, they're like, I'm not eating that much and no one believes me. And I'm like, oh, I do. This is insulin resistance. Like, this is insulin resistance at its absolute best. It's doing exactly what it's supposed to do because it believes it's keeping you alive by doing this, or it wouldn't do it. And I think that trying to just be in curiosity, I wonder if it did work, what would that look like? If I allowed myself to be excited, so much of this curiosity too, I love curiosity. if I allowed myself to be excited, because I maybe think that maybe it could work, even if you're not going to agree with me that it will work, could you believe that it could work? And what would that look like if it could work or would work? What would your life look like? So you can start thinking of those things. Because I often ask in pre-surgical evaluations, what is something not weight related that you're looking forward to? Because I want them, when they do that, to click in to be like, oh, this was the thing. I wanted to go ride the ride. You know, my final straw was I tried to get on this ride. I couldn't get on the ride. It was the most embarrassing situation ever in front of my son. I had to get off the ride and leave and this whole thing. I want to be able to go get on the ride, not think about it, ride the ride, enjoy myself, not worry about all that. So then when that client actually does that, even if they're in the middle of that, I haven't lost enough and I don't know why this is, they're like, oh, this was the thing I said I wanted to do and I did it. So I try to get them to start imagining like what their life could look like if they had surgery and it worked.
Yeah. That's such a, it's so funny. Just going back to what you're saying, where you're talking to them about like the insulin and the metabolic things. And like, I have those same exact conversations with patients because they're like, you know, of course, being the dietitian, they come, they're telling me, what do they eat? And they're like, I really don't eat that much. I'm like, well, first of all, that's a lot of people's problems. But I'm like, yeah, no, it's fine. Like, I it's okay. Like, we're going to get you. And I was like, usually I tell them to eat more and they're surprised. But it's like, yeah, this is different. And for me, what I sometimes experience with people is I find that the pre-op changes are a lot more difficult than the post-op because they don't have these hormonal and metabolic changes, which is where then, you know, thinking of that mind-body connection is so important because it's almost like, well, now it's like willpower, it's the desire to do it, and it's overcoming the habits that people have had for 30, 40, 50 years, you know, expecting to change their habits before surgery. And I think that's where, you know, working on the mental side and a little bit maybe with like the emotional eating and things like that is so important as well.
So what would you say is the biggest advice that you do give to say, you know, okay, let's put ourselves there. Let's, if it did work, curiosity, use your imagination. Ooh, what could life be like? Why is it worth going through a surgery and the physical discomfort and all of this work? So what are some things you tell them to expect for when they wake up from surgery from an emotional standpoint?
Yeah. So first we talk about like the beginning part is really challenging and that's normal. And some people wake up and we're talking like get home. We're not going to talk about actual like anesthesia response, but you get home. It may be really challenging to drink fluid. And that may be incredibly frustrating. You're probably sitting here pre-surgery thinking, why would that be really frustrating? Because that's going to be your entire life, 24 hours a day, to just drink fluid. And that's okay. You're going to have points where you may regret what you did. Totally normal. It's a point of frustration, probably lack of ability to sleep or regulate or even like temperature regulate sometimes. So there's certain things that you may find yourself, but don't worry. Those are temporary situations. Particularly if you wake up, I always warn them too. You find out that your gallbladder was removed. You had a hernia repair. I had a hernia repair outside of bariatric surgery. That thing was painful. I can't imagine having that on top of a surgery. So I had, you know, I had a client that came to you that had a bunch of other lesions and things that happened. And she was in a lot of pain and she's like, what is happening here? And I was like, girl, she like rearranged and had to deal with all those lesions. You know, like, I would imagine you're in some pain here. So kind of reminding them that, you know, you need to be aware of like, what did we actually do? Like in the end, like, did we pull up a gallbladder? Did your appendix not look great? Did you have a hernia? Did we need to repair something? Because then we're going to have to add some recovery time, which makes sense. But from in the beginning, things may be frustrating, and that is okay, because we actually, you know, your stomach has to heal, but still be a stomach. That's the one thing that clients will come and be like, it's really hard to drink. I'm like, yeah, we like chopped your stomach up and then we sewed it back. We said, hey, stomach, we need you to continue to be a stomach, but also heal. So that's normal, expected. And for other people, they'll actually tell me like, my recovery was a lot less crazy than I thought it would be. I felt totally fine. That was my recovery. I accidentally chugged a bottle of water on the way home and then sat there assuming I would die because we weren't supposed to do that. Yeah, I don't know how I did that. So I had no issues with fluid. I had no, you know, I walked up three flights of stairs when I got, like, I felt fine. And I kind of like sat there and I was like waiting, like, oh, the bad things are gonna happen. But I think that all of those things can be normal post-surgery. We won't kind of know until we get there, but kind of focusing on what's your why. What was the reason that you did this to begin with? You want to get off all those diabetes medications. It drives you nuts that you have to like track every morsel of food because you're trying to figure out your sliding insulin. Are you wanting to be able to travel more and it's so uncomfortable at this point? Are you trying to conceive? I have a lot of younger clients that are trying to conceive. So like the longer term goal here will be worth it. But in those moments where you regret it, that's okay too. Like you can be appreciative that you had the opportunity and really pissed that you're currently in this position at the same time. And it doesn't mean anything about you as a person. It just means you're
4 a.m.
Yeah. Right. I work with postpartum and I have another certificate postpartum. And a lot of that, I do a lot of infertility work. It's like the same thing. They're like, I really wanted this. I worked on it for like 10 years. I spent, you know, a house worth of money. And now, like, I don't know if I'm up for this. And it's like, yeah.
Reality hits. Yeah.
Totally understand that.
That one was me too. Yeah.
And so I think that like normalizing that, because again, like what people see on social media and they're like, oh, everything's great. I'm fine. Or they see like the opposite, like their lives are super crazy complications. Things are incredibly rare and really, you know, they'll see that and then they'll see like people are fine. So they don't kind of see that in between and that this temporary situation that we will figure out a way. Like if there is something going on, like we will figure out a way to figure that out. But it's okay if at 4 o'clock in the morning where you just want to go to sleep and you're like, I don't understand why my body's still awake. And then I say, it's because your metabolism is literally revving up and your body can physically feel it. It is funny like that. And again, they're like, oh, well, that makes a lot more sense. So I'm like, yeah, so just focus on resting versus sleeping. Yeah. And then that will be less frustrating and more likely is you'll sleep. But I would expect that your sleep is a little off right after surgery because your body is going through quite a change and you might have taken a nap at 3 o'clock in the afternoon today. And now you're trying to go to bed at 8 and maybe that's not working. So kind of normalizing, educating, but also reminding them it's temporary.
Yes. Such great advice. And I like that a lot. You said a lot of things. I'm like, oh, I got to use that. I should be taking notes here on this. But just, like just rest. And that's a win right there. It's a lot. You're sore. You're tired. There's that early period. And, you know, we recently did a podcast with Laura Grabo, who is also, I know you know her. She's great in this whole space that we're in. And she talked about the post-op period and the phases or the waves, as she put it, of grief. And even the way you're describing it is very much so like that. You just said, like, maybe you're frustrated and angry that you can't drink water at the speed that you once did. And you're angry that you have to track your food or sad. And I just felt like, gosh, that was also such a great way of putting into perspective that you will get to acceptance. This will be, you're saying it's temporary. This too shall pass. And you know, how do you get there? How do you feel about that as a good analogy as to the early post-op periods?
Definitely. There's a lot of grief around also letting go the idea. I think what hits a lot of people and what hit me too was that this truly was a medical condition that was outside of my control.
Yes,
and
it
really was painful to know that because so many people had told me otherwise. So for bariatric surgery to work meant all the messaging that I received from everyone in my life was incorrect. And so that is also something where it's like, because if I had failed, then it would have been like, okay, well, it's all correct. And, you know, like I failed and this really is my fault and I can deal with that. But dealing with the idea that doctors, Weight Watch, yeah, all the things I did were not like that. I think is part of the grief process that we don't often talk about, because that is a really hard, you know, societal da 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 da. If like this truly was a medical condition, why didn't someone do something about it a long time ago? And if this truly was what was happening, why couldn't it be fixed without me going to this? I think that's also that anger. Why did I have to go to this level? And at that time, it was a little, it was 12 years ago. So it's a little, the surgery is a bit different than it is now. But it's like, why did I have to go there in order to get this fixed when this was like a medical, like all that messaging that I had received? So I do think that's part of that anger acceptance, even yeah. though our brain says that should be relieving. Right. So my brain says, yo, Ashley, that should be relieving that this isn't your fault, but it actually caused anger and sadness and all of the relationships people hid, or, you know, I think I had an ex that kind of did me in, you know, like wouldn't be with me in front of other people because like of my size or what was going on. So I think that's one of the, like, all of that was like, that had nothing to do with me. And then I think the biggest adjustment post-op is deciding who you're going to be now. Mm-hmm. Now knowing that you don't have to be the best friend, the people pleaser, the everything for everybody. Who are you going to be now? And how are you going to deal with the people that no longer want to be with you now, who are going to say the surgery changed you, who are going to say, you know, I didn't think this was who you really, you know, I don't know, whatever they say. I remember I had a friend that was like, she had been kind of distant. I came to her and I was like, you know, what's going on? She's like, well, I just thought when you lost all the weight, you become a bitch. And I was like, well, I think I just am me, but smaller, in a smaller body. I don't think I had a personality transplant. I'm still me, right. But I think that, and it took me a lot longer to decide who I was going to be. In the beginning, I just figured I'd be the same me because that would be a lot easier. So continue all of those things that helped me. And again, getting into like therapy stuff, the underlying feeling there, so in therapy, we call that core belief, is you're only worthy of being on this earth if. I'm only worthy of being on this earth if I'm producing, if I am the best friend, if I, not just because I'm here. And so the biggest shift in therapy for a lot of people is just removing that if and being like, I'm worthy of being on this earth because I am a human being and I am here. And that is a very big shift, because historical messaging around, because you're in a larger body, you shouldn't be in this space. And so that is a really big shift for a lot of people to, one, recognize and feel the pain and anger of that and work through that and decide, who am I going to be on the other side? And that's something that we don't really talk from a medical standpoint, because we're just like, you did great. Yeah. You lost weight. Like, great. And they're like, okay, well, what am I doing now about all, you know, all this other stuff? Yeah. I'm like, oh, that's you and the therapist, you know, you and the therapist. Yeah.
That's when we send them to you. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you that's so interesting. Like, you know, I was reading after I gave birth, I became then formerly infertile, because now if I'm not infertile anymore, I have a baby. So what do you mean you have infertility? Yeah. You don't, you had a baby. So there's that whole piece, but you know, obviously you're in this space and you're in, you know, the whole mental health aspect. When did you decide to go into bariatric therapy? Was it before or after you had surgery?
No, I thought, what on God's earth will I be able to help people with? I haven't figured this out either. No. So I became a therapist a couple years before I had bariatric surgery, but I was working in family planning and perinatal work. And so actually one of the reasons I had surgery is I had a client that I was in their home visiting, helping them prepare for their pregnancy. And she looked at me and she goes, you're going to come in my house and tell me I need to take care of myself? You don't look like you've taken care of yourself a day in your life, which I understood her anger. Mm-hmm. And I understood it had really had nothing to do with me. And I totally understood that she was probably accurate. But it was funny because later on in my career, I had a client that I was working on with something, and she looked at me and she goes, what do you know about being fat? Doesn't look like you've had a fat day. I was like, we cannot win. We cannot win. But you can, which is part of why you can't do this for other people, but because you won't win in that way. But so I Oh man, I think I waited 6 years, 5 or 6 years. And I just kind of had my toe in it in the beginning before I went like full-fledged. I went fully committed to full-time bariatrics in 2018 is when I
Wow.
started.
Okay, so 6 years you've been in this space. And not only that, you are now expanding to not just, your work. You have additional therapists. You have this very, very flourishing business in helping to prepare patients before, after surgery, all of the things that you do, but you're also helping other therapists, mental health providers, in making sure that you kind of like scale it in a way that they can take all of your learnings, personal experience, patient, anecdotal stories, and be able to spread it more. I think that's so cool. How do you like that new aspect that this business has taken for you?
So I love teaching other therapists. I've been a qualified supervisor. So in the state of Florida, when you get your license, we're under licensed for a while, and then you're fully licensed and you work with a fully licensed person in order to get licensed. So I've been doing that for a long time. And I love that type of work. And so that's nothing new to me. Specifically for bariatrics is. So what I figured out is I went on a couple podcasts that were client facing and I got all these reach outs and they're like, hey, do you have someone? Can I see you? And I had to say no, because we're license dependent for the state. I said, but I'll find you someone in Mississippi. Sure. So I would go out and try to find people that were educated in bariatrics and I really wasn't finding it. And so I kind of simultaneously, I had already part of it too, which I think a lot of people can relate to this, in my brain, why was I the expert? Like I was not an expert in this. I was an expert in my own experience, and I had a business coach actually that was like, well, if you can't accept that you're the expert, then accept that you're really organized. You got templates. You can teach people how to be more organized. You can teach people education. I was like, yeah, I could buy that. And she was like, there you go. She's like, so that's
Okay.
oh.
Just package it a
So
little
I was like,
differently.
yeah. Yeah, so I
Doesn't
was like,
make you an
oh, okay.
expert, but okay.
But okay. And the funny thing is I realized after the fact, even the definition of an expert, I technically am. So I was like, okay, I just had to kind of get over that hump. I think there's a lot of fear around, like, if you put yourself out there as an expert and then people come. And also bariatrics, I'm sure Dr. Dovick, you've ran into this. It's really controversial in the therapy community. I've been yelled at. I've been told that I'm filling eating disorder clinics up because I'm not like passing appropriate people, and then I have to educate how, like, we don't pass fail people. This is like informed consent is all we're really. I literally just had this, and it was actually a client, not a client, another bariatric person that posted on Instagram how, like, if we really did psyche evals, people would be in the loony bin instead of the operating room. And I was like, yeah, so I do those evals. That's not how this works. And I think it was actually a really good exchange and like educational exchange. And I love that person. I know who they are, but it just is a very weird, it's a very weird thing, even for bariatric patients to say that. But like we believe that people have body autonomy and can make their own choice surrounding surgery. That seems off or odd to some therapists. So we kind of get it from both sides. So we get it from the eating disorder community to say, like, everyone who's obese has an eating disorder, so why are you passing them? Which is ridiculous. They don't. And the other side of kind of the fat acceptance movement or haze to say you shouldn't be telling people to have surgery. And so there's some education there to tell them we are not telling anyone to have surgery. We are helping them understand what will happen, and so they can make that choice. But I also, if we truly believe it, health at every size, that includes in a smaller body too. And so again, people have the ability to make their own decisions and body autonomy. And so, so to put myself out there as a therapist saying, like, oh, I'm going to teach bariatrics, there's some vulnerability for a whole bunch of people to yell at me, which they did. And then I figured out it's fine. Like, I got much better at like what I was going to say when that happened. And I can still stand firm. And that I think oftentimes people also don't realize the mean things that they're saying about bari they're saying it about me too. So if they're saying that obesity is an eating disorder, they're saying I had an eating disorder and I didn't. I had a metabolic condition that I could like very clearly pinpoint. And so it really exposes bias that I wish we did not have. You would think in a therapeutic community, we wouldn't have biases around that, but we do. We have lots of biases. So I think that has been a really fun shift, and it wasn't as painful as I thought it would be. And we're educating a lot of people. I'm actually working on, like, I'm going to put it out there, so I actually do it. I'm working on actually a new training for therapists that talks about the focusing on the skills. So the right now I have a training that's for pre-surgical. And then mostly if you do coaching with me, then you learn, I teach you the skills. So kind of the pre-op, post-op, maintenance, and regain or weight recurrence. So I'm developing the trainings now that go into like 10 major skills for each set and how you teach it. And then it can be turned into a support group guide as well. So like a provider could come and run a support group. And for the clients who are listening, yay, I'm turning all of that information into a journal that I'll sell on Amazon. So it'll have the 10 skills in the front. It'll have tracking in the back, but it will not have traditional tracking. It will be focused more on failure as learning experiences. So mindset around failure. So like changing that to like, what did I learn from that situation? What can I move forward? And then it'll have all the skills in the front. So if you needed to, like, I'm getting stuck, you can go to the front and be like, okay, emotional eating. Step one, step two, let me try this and then track some of the thoughts that I'm having about that. So hopefully, because that like doesn't exist. It's weird. I went on Amazon. It doesn't exist. And it's something that definitely could be used. Yeah. And I already
have information. Super cool. Yeah, when you know, we've thought about putting together like a food mood journal, which sounds like what you're kind of doing. Like, if I'm eating this, what emotion am I feeling? And it's hard, you know, for us to even identify emotions beyond happy, sad, mad, you know. How do you teach like identifying the deeper feeling? I feel very lonely right now. Like how, like when you're talking about this journal, like how would you advise somebody? Because I'd open it up and I'd be like, all right, I ate that cheese stick. Now what do I like? How do I like, you know, you want to take it seriously.
Yeah.
Right? And you want to be able to help yourself with it, but like, how do you do it?
So it's interesting that you say cheese stick, because I bet you, I know what you might've been looking for. So when I start, I don't start with emotions because that's really tough. I'll be honest with you, that's tough for me because as a therapist, we like cut ourselves off from a lot of emotions. So like in the beginning, if you tell me how I feel, I'd be like, I don't know. So what I ask people first is, what did you actually need? So you're standing in front of the refrigerator, you've opened up the refrigerator, you're like, I am not hungry, but here I am looking around for something. What are you needing? Am I needing satisfaction? Am I needing connection? Am I needing something to do? Am I needing fulfillment? Like, what do you actually need in that moment? Do we need to phone a friend? Well, it's 2 a.m. Okay, so we can't phone a friend. So maybe we go on Instagram. Maybe we watch Friends because that's the thing that like reminds us that we have a community, that we know what's going to happen. It feels connectiveness, and that's okay. So I think that we really want to get into the emotions of it, though, are important kind of when we dig into deeper stuff, like why would you feel you need a satisfaction in the middle of the night? That's kind of a deeper potential therapy thing. But what I actually needed in the moment, I actually can connect to. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those thoughts, particularly if you're someone who has ADHD or neurodivergent, you may not even realize when you're doing it, which is like a weird, like myself included. Like I figure it out. Like after I've gotten back to the couch, I flipped it and now I'm looking in the bowl and there's no more in there. And I'm like, there's also just patterns. So when I sit down to do admin work, I noticed this funny pattern. I had to go in the kitchen and get a snack. And I was like, I do a lot of admin work, so I can't be getting up and getting snacks all day long. What is that from? Yep. Oh, when I was a kid, when you came home from school before you did the homework, which I really didn't want to do, you ate a snack. So this is a normal, natural cycle that your brain has figured out. So do I want to continue it? So this is kind of step two. Do I want to continue it? Do I want to like it in that moment, especially, okay, so it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you open the fridge, like true night eating, right? You're looking at everything. Sometimes the choice may be, I actually do want to emotionally eat and I'm going to choose to do it. I'm going to do it and be done with it and call it a day. I'm not going to guilt trip myself. I'm not going to think about it all night. I'm going to then not going to sleep and then wake up the next, like, I'm going to be like, my quickest way to ending this is to have a snack and go to bed. Mm-hmm. So I will choose consciously versus. So what we do in therapy is I want you to make choices based on conscious decision making versus subconscious are old crap that we do not need to. So it's one of the big cycle or things that we'll talk about is like eating in front of people. Like, so you eat perfectly in front of people and then you eat everything else in secret. Like, we got to cut that shit out. Like, no more. Like, eat what you're going to eat.
That's a huge thing. I think that happens a lot.
Right? Because historically, we've been told being fat is your own darn fault. If you didn't eat all that stuff, you wouldn't be fat. So your feeling is in front of other people, I have to prove to them that I am worthy of being here by having the smallest, most perfect plate. And then I'll go home and eat the things that I want. And now I'm going to be driven by shame and guilt instead of I'm doing what I want to do to feel healthy. So again, shame and guilt comes up a lot. That usually drives the bus. We want to like remove that driver and put it in a seat in the back, be driven by conscious decision-making and, you know, feeling good about our decisions. Like you get to go to Universal and get Sprinkles cupcakes. Oh no, it's Voodoo Donuts. You can do that. But I want you to make a conscious decision. I want you to eat some protein before so you don't get sick on the next ride. I want you to be like, I'm really looking forward to this. I want this. That this weekend, my mom lives near a Cronut. It's like the donuts that look like.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they're amazing. And so I'm like, okay, like think this out. We're going to get a couple. We cut them up. We had breakfast. I made sure I had protein. Like I'm in a really good place. I had a couple bites. They were delicious. They were satisfying. I ate them and then I was done. I did not think about all day how, oh my God, I can't believe as a bariatric therapist that I eat donuts. Like, no, like cut all, like that's what we talk about a lot. I'm like, okay, because sometimes we feel like we don't have a lot of control over our thoughts. Sometimes we have control over to say like, this thought is dumb and I'm done with it. I don't need that anymore. I really can enjoy donuts. That it does not mean that I'm an out of control, terrible bariatric patient. It means that I wanted a donut. I ate some of it. I felt satisfied. I'm good. I moved on.
Yeah. And you moved on to the next meal. It's interesting. I just thought of something that happened to me the other day. It's completely unrelated, but that idea of like having kind of control over your own thoughts. So I grocery shop at Aldi. I don't know if you've ever shopped. I know you don't grocery shop, but if you've ever shopped at Aldi, it's like the checkout is like the fastest thing in the world, right? That's kind of one of the things they're known for. They don't bag your groceries for you. They just put them into the cart. And then there's like a separate baggage area. It's all cost cutting measures, right? So Aldi's super cheap. Anyway, I go, I'm by myself and there's nobody in line. Or there's like one dude in front of me in the line. He only has like three things. Well, they're so fast. I always feel like I have to have the belt like filled up. It's like a race between me and the cashier. And we used to, before we had the baby, my husband and I would always go to the grocery store together and he would load the belt. So I didn't pay attention. I'd just be standing behind the cart, like just hanging out. So now I have to do it myself because he stays home with the baby. Anyway, so I do this, I win the race, thank God. Then I get to the self bagging area. And all of a sudden I find myself like, I'm doing a horrible job of bagging my groceries. Like I'm putting things in the weirdest places. Like things are not stacked appropriately. Like, you know, I'm like trying to do my refrigerator and my out and I'm going so fast. And I finally catch myself and I'm like, Hannah, pause, slow down. You're not actually in a race.
Right.
Like I have put myself into this situation of feeling so overwhelmed. Like the store wasn't closing. You know, it was like, there was no outward pressure except for me having all of a sudden like this feeling. And it was, I literally had to like, I may have even said my name out loud because it was just like, I caught myself in that moment, but it was like, take a second, take a breath. Okay. Now put the lettuce box in the thing. And then, you know, like it's going to be okay. It's going to take you two more minutes to put your groceries away and that's fine. And so it is, it's kind of interesting to think, you know, it is, it's like we can consciously change those thoughts and those patterns that we have of like, all right, I'm, you know, like you said, I'm in front of the refrigerator and you may like feel like all of a sudden, like, how did I even get here? And it's like, okay, great. I caught it in that moment. And now I can take the second and say, you know what? I'm going to eat the thing and be done with it. Like you said, cause that might be the fastest way. Or, okay, no, you know what? Let's close the fridge and I'm going to walk over to the living room and sit down for a minute. And maybe that gives me the pause to do it. And maybe I still go back to the fridge and that's what I ultimately decide to do. But like, I'm going to take that minute and like, oh, it's okay. It's going to be all right. We're here.
Yep.
Exactly. And I think also on your whole analogy of, you know, being in a store and feeling pressured, that's also that like, you know, we're so worried about what everybody else thinks. Like, I don't want to slow somebody else down. I got to be super efficient. Like, they have this model for a reason. I don't want to be, you know, the weak link in this whole like bagging of grocery saga. Yeah. But I mean, but that's how we are with a lot of different things. And, you know, it's just how public perceives us. And I mean, I just really want to highlight your point about, you know, even growing up, anybody that I knew who struggled with their weight, who, you know, had the disease of obesity, in hindsight, that's what they had. And, you know, I always think about eating with them publicly, no matter what it was, whatever meal it was, whatever environment situation we were in, how they would be perfect and how we would all every time comment like, man, you're the healthiest eater. And it was like, I was like feeding the cycle for them too of shame and guilt. And boy, like, oh, that just hit a chord that I wish I could go back in time and be like, ah, I don't know. Like, how do you even break that for somebody? That's really, really hard. And I think, yeah, that's tough. I think that a lot of things about external pressure and what other people think of us and how that internalizes and how we kind of manifest that is,
Don't talk about what we're eating.
Don't talk about it.
Yeah. And I think even for the Aldi thing, like someone in a bigger size may identify that they're afraid that other people would think they're slow because they're larger size. And so now there's even more pressure to get things going. Yeah. And so,
or are people looking at what's in my cart?
Yes.
Oh yeah. Or yeah.
Looking at eating the cronut at Universal, like, ma'am, you do not need that cronut. But like, you were so judgy and so many things.
Were you tall as a child, as tall as you are now, Dr. Dover?
Oh yeah.
Did very, you very feel
tall.
Like,
both of my parents are 6'2". So I was always the tallest, always the tallest. And then girls are taller than boys. So, I mean, when I was in fifth grade, I was 5'4". I do remember that kind of, you know, like how some people, they might remember their weight. In fifth grade, I was 130 pounds or whatever. I know that I was 5'4". And then I even grew, after I went to college, I grew until I was like 20. I was like 5'9". And now I'm like 6 foot. So I grew a few more inches. I was like, oh my gosh.
It's not common for women to grow.
Yeah. So weird. Yeah. It was so weird. I had to like buy all new clothes. I was an adult. I was you know, like still growing.
Having a growth spurt.
Kind of concerned that I'm having a growth spurt as a sophomore at Penn State. Like, this is weird. Like, I'm not fitting on the twin bed anymore. Like, it's odd.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've always been very tall. And actually, I was always very, very introverted. I know you did not believe me.
I remember my friends who were tall and like their goal, I remember because I was fat and they were tall. So we got along really well because like they wanted to shrink and I wanted to shrink. And so like there was this understood thing between us that it was like, we both feel really awkward in our bodies right now. And how can I be smaller? And I was curious. I know now you certainly you're not that way, but if there was like some kind of thing you went through to like, just be like, I'm tall, get over it. Like for everyone else.
Yes. That did not happen until not all that long ago. I'm going to say like 20s, 30s. And then as I've been in attending, I mean, I could go on and on about my own site. Can we schedule a side of our conversation for therapy here? But yeah, I think, you know, yes, I never struggled with my weight, but I had a lot of other insecurities, had terrible hair, terrible teeth. My glasses that I'm very, my vision is awful. Like I'm legally blind. And so I have a thing like no one can ever see me with my glasses. I don't know, like who cares? Yeah. Like you look great. I mean, you have glasses right now. And I'm like, I don't think anything of you being like, oh my God, Ash is wearing glasses.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
You look great. You look perfect.
Yeah, no, it is a weird thing. I think that it's this like very much awareness of our own stuff. And we assume that everyone else, like I know when I was in a larger body, I was always aware of how other people perceived space and how I perceive space. I'm also somebody who's like very super visual. I can parallel park really well. So sometimes that could be problematic when you're in a larger body because you're very aware of how much space you take up. And so you're kind of always thinking about that. And so it is hard. When that is so much of your identity, it is very hard to give that up and be who are you now. So really good example is at least when I was plus size, we had like three stores. We had Lane Bryant, which was a little too old, Tord, which was a little too expensive.
Oh, yes.
And we had Ashley Stewart. I don't know if she is anymore. It was more targeted. Not necessarily for my age group, but they had fun stuff. I don't know if Ashley Stewart's around, if they're still around. And we had Girlfriends LA when I was young, which was a catalog. It had all sizes. It was, I think, one of the first ones that had like all sizes. But it's like, I remember when I no longer could shop there in any of those stores. And then I had to go into like a normal store, or, you know, at that time, you know, they didn't have a lot of plus in stores. I would be like, well, what am I supposed to wear now? I have four sections in Kohl's. I have juniors. I have the old lady section. I have this is section, and I have petites. I can kind of go in all sides. I have no idea what to do. It was much easier when I could go into Torrid or Lane Bryant. They'd be like, this is what's in season this year. And I'd be like, all right, it's what we did 2 years ago. I remember this. This looks good. This doesn't. So it is, and that's kind of more of a minor thing in kind of figuring out who you are now. But I think for a lot of people, particularly, think of one of your patients who's on Instagram. If so much of your life has been being accepting of your size, and then you want to change that, who will you become now? And I think it's even more of a struggle now with social media, because that can create a lot of like your identity. I was very thankful I did not have that. We didn't. I don't think Instagram was around when I had surgery, but because I didn't connect with the bariatric community, I was very secretive about my surgery, which is more common back then. I wasn't kind of out, I think, until my 5th year surgeryversary. I think that's when I first like publicly. Yeah, I publicly acknowledged that I even had bariatric surgery. So, a very interesting, you know, side thing. I think nowadays it's a lot more, we talk about it more. It's a lot more accepting. It's out there. But I had also kind of lived up the rise and the fall of Lapband, which was a weird time to be a bariatric patient, because Lapband had such, and I lived in Jacksonville at the time, which had one of the biggest providers, he's still there, of Lapband. And so there were a lot of people in my work or other places that had not done well at all, or had some pretty awful things, you know, due to the Lapband. So I also probably was quiet from a standpoint of, I didn't want people to think I had Lapband, and that, you know, what had happened to them would happen to me. At that time, I had a more what they had considered, you know, extreme version. I had gastric bypass, but it, you know, so again, like people had feeling, well, those who are still with, why wouldn't you just have Lapband? It's less invasive, you know. But ironically, 12 years ago, my bariatric surgeon saw the writing on the window for, you know, Lapband. It was like, yeah, we don't do those anymore. And that was 12 years ago. So, you know, I think it was a very interesting time and a very different time to be a bariatric patient 12 years ago than it is now, where there's a lot more celebrities even who've come out and been honest about their surgery.
Yeah. That's so interesting. I know, it's funny because I just got a call to our office, somebody requesting Lapband. And I was like, we don't do that. But have you heard about bariatric surgery?
Exactly.
I'm like, check us out. Because it's, you know, we now see people kind of downstream from that. Gosh, get this thing out of me, or it's not working. But that's another whole tangent on the Lapband.
Seriously. No, there's a lot of considerations. And I know that it is, you know, brave choice, I think, to put yourself, like you said, vulnerably out there on display for public commentary when you do identify as, you know, I love my body, I love myself, I'm, you know, bigger. And I think I know which patient you're talking about. And she has like a huge following as this plus sized person. Mm-hmm. And now that she's losing weight and loving life and being able to move and like ride a bike, which she couldn't do before, and all these incredible things, I think it's, I don't know how it would feel. I mean, you have all these huge wins, and it's like about me. And at one point you can say, I'm so happy, like with this choice that I made. But also when you see your following, like she's different. Like you said, like, oh, you're the bitch now that you lost weight or what have you. So she's lost followers, which obviously these people, you don't know, have hundreds of thousands of friends. Like these are strangers. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, they could be your biggest supporter, or maybe even blocking you, writing these negative things, you know, saying that everybody needs to go to a loony bin, all that consideration. There's a lot of things there, and I don't know how, you know, boy, that just layers another thing of complexity on the whole situation.
But that's why we have people like you, Ashlyn.
Exactly.
So that we can say, please go see her.
Yeah.
She's really good at this.
She
knows way more than we do.
And so much so that we wanted you to have you come on to this podcast today so that we could promote our upcoming support group we are doing in April.
Yeah.
And that is the third Wednesday of April. Okay, April. I'm like full blown here trying to
look at my calendar. Yeah.
So on Wednesday, April 17th at 7 o'clock PM Eastern via Zoom, go to bodybybariatrics.com to our four patients events link. You can subscribe to our calendar. We are going to be having a live interactive support group for our patients led by Ashlyn, where she is going to be there and give you some of this personalized advice and coaching to the questions and the needs that you have.
Yeah.
I'm like,
so
on this. We are so excited. Sometimes the two of us, we're always droning on and on. And we need flavor. You know, we need that in there for this.
We have to admit we don't know everything, which is hard for us to do.
We do not know everything. And I have such muscle memory. I was telling Hannah right before we came on with you. I was like, gosh, like you want to ask me about the technical aspects of creating a gastrojejunostomy and exactly the sizing tube and the way I do it and all the angles. I have such muscle memory explaining those procedures. I'm thinking about something else while I'm talking about it. Like I've gotten to that point, but like I have to be fully engaged when I'm talking about feelings side of this journey. Like I don't have muscle memory on this. Like this is something that I also need to be better surgeon provider of bariatric care and really like lean into every word that you're saying and truly take notes, like I said earlier.
Yeah.
And it's so difficult because everybody is so different that, you know, even if like our stomachs tend to look all the same, but you know, how our backgrounds, the messaging we received, all that is so different person to person. You know, why something brings up something in someone versus it doesn't bring up in someone else is different. And I think that's why the mental health, like individual work in mental health, is so important because we need to figure out for you why that's occurring.
Yeah. So where do people find you if they want? Yes. Obviously, you work with patients in the state of Florida, but you might be able to provide for other places. Hopefully you're building your network there. So, but where can people find you? Social media, website?
Yeah. So if you are outside of the state of Florida and you are just looking for a bariatric therapist, I run findabariatrictherapist.com. We have many, many providers throughout the United States who specifically are trained and specialize in bariatric surgery. If you are a bariatric therapist, we would love to also have you on board. There's a way for you to sign up. So findabariatrictherapist.com or at findabariatrictherapist on Instagram. If you're looking for me specifically, if you want to look at my personal page where I do meal prepping and bariatric adventures, all sorts of fun things, I am Ashlyn Change the Number 4 Life 2012. That's more my personal, though public facing page. And then Advanced Bariatric Counseling is my bariatric page for my business. And then Bariatric Therapy Business Coach. I think that's right. Is my bariatric therapy business coach page. That's for providers who are looking to get into bariatrics. I post daily on almost all of my accounts. Either tips, tricks, either specific for, specific for clients or specific for providers, but each account gets something almost every day. So those are all my hands. I have so many,
social media. I know, we did the same thing. We're here.
I know Hannah's like, switch it up. I'm like, I know, I'm trying, but mommy is tired, very, very tired.
Yes. And I am too old for TikTok. So I am currently only on Instagram.
All on Instagram. All right. Noted.
Same. I mean, I try to do it and I'm like, why do I get like tens and tens of likes? That's it. Like, what is going on? Like everybody else is getting viral. I'm like, oh, well, that's a whole other thing. So, well, absolutely awesome. I'm chatting with you today. Yeah. I hope everybody on here will be on our support group next month in April. You just bring so much great perspective, personal, professional, in what you do. Your expertise is just outstanding.
Yes.
I love chatting with you. And just a really random side note to end this. You know, I've always been watching Ashlyn on all of these social media handles that she has. And and I've known her, and we kind of like direct message each other, but it's like one of those like stranger things, like, oh, clapping hands, or no, like she responded to my stories, I do hers, great. And then she asked me a question about if I would look over some of her stuff for the training of the bariatric therapist. And I was like, yeah, I'll do it. And I said I would do it, and I wanted to do it, and I hadn't done it. Then the two of us randomly, unbeknownst to each other, were flying from Orlando to Vegas to see Adele on different nights, but we were both going there. And I was just sitting in the airport, and she's like, Betsy Dovek? And I'm like, Ashlyn Douglas Barnes, what is this? And so we sat by each other. So our plane was delayed like 5 hours.
Oh, yeah.
You know this?
Yeah, I remember. Oh, you guys like went live together, didn't you?
She went live, and then like we like planned this whole thing. And now I'm like, true friends, because we had this, I didn't even want the plane to go, which was kind of crazy. Cause it's like, don't you want to get to Vegas? My sister's like, are you so mad? I'm like, no. Actually the greatest thing happened.
Yeah. Serendipitous.
It was. And it was serendipitous. And I truly know that that chance meeting of being isolated together for 5-6 hours waiting was not just by chance. I don't know. I felt like that was crazy. So,
and it was funny because I told my friend, I was like, I think that's Dr. Dovek over there, but I don't. And I knew it was you because you had with your podcast shirt on. I'm like, it definitely is.
Of course,
I'm like,
I did. I have his podcast shirt on.
Yeah, I was like, I'm gonna leave her alone. And my friend was like, yeah, you should leave. I was like, oh, I should leave her alone. And I like went. I was like, fuck it. I was like, let's go over. Let's talk. I was like, hey, like, I think you know me. I think I know you. But you were so friendly. I was like, so surprised. So like, poor lady wants to get on this plane. We're delayed. Was the man on that flight too that was removed, or was it on the one home? No, it was on the one there. Oh, no. Sorry. That was the, I went to ASMBS to Vegas as well. We had a man reviewed, and there was a bariatric surgeon that was in front of me. Anyway, sorry. Another time, another story for another time. Every time I go to Vegas on, what were we at? Frontier.
Yeah. Cause the flights from Orlando to Vegas are terrible.
It's only Frontier. But anyways, thank you guys so much for having me. I super appreciate it. I can't wait for future events and things for us all to do.
Yes. Well, thank you for joining. And I'm going to do our quick plug here. Yeah. Find us on Instagram at Dr. X Dietitian, at Dr. Dovek, at HannahSchuyler.rd, at Body by Bariatrics. We'll be sure to be sharing the link for that support group next month.
Yes.
And check us out there. And we're always happy to answer questions. And I know Ashlyn's always happy to chat with people as well. So thanks again for joining, and we will see you all next time.
Bye, guys.
Bye.